Kupfer. If I could ask how you pronounce your last name, please.
Tosted.
Tosted. Okay, thank you. Just like it says. Yeah, okay, good. Well, Christopher or Chris?
Either's fine.
Okay, cool. So Chris Tosted, welcome. Thank you for coming in today. Thank you for applying. Thank you for your interest in being a regent for the University of Minnesota. Over the next 45 minutes or so, we'll ask you some questions and hopefully have a discussion about issues and ideas pertinent to the university. But to get us started, we invite you to make an opening statement. And then as we near the end of the questioning, I will try to give you some sort of indication that we're within a question or two of the end. And then I'll invite you to make a closing statement as well. So with that, the floor is yours to start off with this statement.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would just like to start off by saying thank you, both for the opportunity to be here and strive for this role, strive for an ability to serve the university, but also I'd like to thank you for your service, both on the level of the fact that you are all strong members, committed service members of the community, of the university, and you have a vested interest just as much as I hope to go on and serve the university through this process. So I want to thank you for that and acknowledge that. So I would like to open up with just essentially my personal background, give you a little bit. I, in conversation, was able to touch on the historical origin of my last name, but I think what I'll try and do is give you a little information about where I come from and what characterizes my character. So I grew up in a town called Montevideo. It's a small town in western Minnesota. I was not born there, but I consider that my home. I spent my entire childhood there, and I was born to parents Mark and Becky. My mother works at Chippewa County Montevideo Hospital. She's an RN there, and she works doing cardiac rehab, and she's been a nurse for 25 years now. My father works in the dairy industry. He works at a place called American Milk Producers Incorporated, and he works in dairy processing. My friends and family affectionately refer to him as the cheese man. Just because they're everybody loves dairy, right? Free cheese. So those areas that that they work in, service and product, working with a strong coalition of partners, and this being able to represent rural America and being able to be a part of a small community like that. I feel like my parents as examples there set a model for what effectively built my character. So going forward, I'd like to hopefully be able to touch on and expand upon those issues, those elements of my background and experience, as we'll get a little bit further into it, that define that aspect of my character. So moving forward, my high school experience was defined by athletics and things like a Knowledge Bowl and you know, the typical things. But one thing I really want to point out about my high school experience is when I locked on to the university and realistically where my story began with the University of Minnesota, and that was in the 10th grade. And I was giving a lot of consideration to what I wanted to do. I felt like a motivated student. I felt like I knew I wanted to do something significant. And my path and my eyes set on medicine. I decided at that point and henceforth have wanted to go into the medical field, working as a doctor, working as a clinician. And the default answer was the University of Minnesota. Stands out as the number one research university in Minnesota, the only research university, I guess you should say. And that's where I decided I was only going to the University of Minnesota. Ultimately, it's the only place I applied, to be honest. And I feel very fortunate to call myself an alum of the College of Biological Sciences. So going forward, another aspect of my university story that I think really accentuates my connection to the university and where I moved forward following that high school experience was actually the first experience that I had in my orientation. So very brief background, the College of Biological Sciences does something called Nature of Life, which is a program. It's actually our orientation. It's separate from the university's standard orientation, and it's conducted at the Itasca Biological Station that the university hosts and manages up there. And what it essentially boils down to is a 3-day science camp which does not sound very fun to most people, but I can say that from day one, from moment one, even the bus ride up there, that this was truly a clear indication of the sense of community that I would have at the university, the bonds that I would create, and the way that I would be able to succeed in what I was doing. So from that point forward, that's truly where I think my love, so not only the intention to go to, but my love for the university was born. Going forward, I think my experience started out pretty typical of a pre-med student. It was, you know, a very A-type personality, very dead set on this idea of success and things like that. But I had a pretty significant transition that I hope to elaborate on later. Hopefully you'll ask me questions about it. But the movement from the idea that science and technology are the only thing that matters to this idea that advocacy and representation and the movement towards being able to speak on behalf of something that you stand for is a very significant transition that I saw about the middle of my college undergraduate career. And what I ended up doing was working to a great extent with a couple organizations that represented students, one of them being the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. In doing that, I felt like I was able to redefine not only what I was doing specifically in that moment, whether it be defining a policy issue or defining something that students need, but also I turned this around. I had to teach this to people, which I had no idea what I was doing to start off. But I, after doing that, after really starting to wrap my mind around this idea of what advocacy means, I realized that it's something that I can apply to basically anything in my life. I realized that I can redefine the way I want to be a doctor, the way that I want to do research, the way that I want to take my past experiences and move them forward to define new opportunities or to find other things that realistically other people need or myself. So that is, I would say, a great example of what's redefined and even taken me to this post where I hope to move forward to become a regent. So in doing that, I'd like to, that's essentially my background, I would say, you know, quick summary. I would like to touch briefly on just kind of more specifically some of the experiences that I have and how I feel those make me qualified as a candidate and why I feel like as a sum they are very special to me. So putting this into the context, you have my resume in front of you. You've seen these things. I'd like to kind of elaborate on how I organize these things and why I've come to think that they make me qualified. In looking at each of the individual experiences that I have, I've made a point of having a very broad depth of a diversity of experience, you could say. Being able to say that I have some level of knowledge or background in most areas that define leadership. And what I feel, in taking all these things together, what I feel like is an important thing to point out is that I feel that each of these things fall neatly into certain categories that reflect upon the university, specifically the university's mission, broken up into three parts. Looking at things like research and discovery, I have a great deal of experience. I have spent 5 years, my entire undergraduate career, doing research to a high degree in the field of biomedical sciences. More specifically, I work in muscle development in the Stem Cell Institute, focusing on regenerative medicine. Comparatively, looking at another aspect, that second leg of the stool, the university's mission, teaching and learning. I spent 3.5 years as a teaching undergraduate and graduate student, where I was able to work with integrative biology lab, a capstone lab for underclassmen for biology majors that required a great deal of input on their behalf. Not only that, but it is kind of at the forefront of what the university is trying to shift towards in terms of integrated learning, and I was able to be a part of defining what that course became, being the first class that went through it, and then the first generation of teaching students that were able to move this class forward. Did you have a question? And then looking to the third branch, outreach and public service. And I would say this is the first branch that I considered wasn't really much of a priority for myself, like I touched on, but turned into something that in some ways defines all of the others. And I think that the most standout example of that is my work with the MSLC, working to not only redefine the way that students and staff are doing outreach, but also the way that they're serving the university as a whole. So taken together, I feel like those experiences define something where I have tangible background, things I've done on the ground, and ultimately an important factor is something that I would be able to translate into an experience in policy formation when considering what the university's needs are on a very large scale. So with that, I would like to move to open for questions and go with the rest of you.
Sure, thank you. Could you just briefly inform me on what the MSLC is?
Sure.
So, and your role and what you do, just a quick answer.
Sure. The Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition is the representative student advocacy arm for the University of Minnesota. This was an organization that, at its current state, represents all six student associations. That's all five campus student undergraduate student associations and graduate student associations in government, essentially. And that's all levels of government. We did work on local, state, and federal levels. We create policy issues and take action to represent student needs. And we do this from a broad scale, considering things like the budget, cost of tuition, down to very minute levels to the needs of specific student groups, not exactly always representing them, but finding ways to enable their own means of advocating for themselves. So we tried to hit a very broad spectrum of items that we covered. My particular role in this organization was the founder, the chairman of the governing body, and the director for the Twin Cities campus. And a little historical account, this organization, I started working on this kind of stuff, working with an organization called the Legislative Certificate Program.
Legislative what?
Legislative Certificate Program. Similar concept about representing students in government was strictly on the Twin Cities campus that I worked with this, and frankly we didn't do a lot with it. It was largely ineffective. Structurally, there were issues working with other campuses, and we did not have the impact that we wanted to at the state. It essentially boiled down to something that builds someone's resume and their ability to go on to other things. So recognizing that, I took an initiative and collected and organized the student leaders from across each campus and made a point to make this an integrated coalition, much in resemblance of the university structure and the way that we work with the core campuses. I made a point of, instead of looking to, as individuals, work towards a common cause of, putting our name out there or putting our associations with political figures out there, but instead building a brand, building a name that would consistently, the MSLC is something that will stand and carry forward and mean student advocacy, something that students can rely on and go to, and something that legislators, this was an important factor, something that legislators will hear, recognize, and acknowledge. So and within that concept, we were able to gain a much greater vested interest on legislators' parts. So my job then was to overcome very significant institutional cultural issues. Just put briefly, we did not work together very well. There was tension here and there, and it was realistically rather difficult to. It took the greater part of a year to win over many members of, for good reason, many members of the system. But as a whole, I would say we were able to very effectively come together and put forth an organization that now operates very efficiently. It's, excuse me, in its second year, and I feel very confident in what I was able to do, investing an interest in long-term outcomes.
Thank you.
That wasn't exactly short.
I may have heard wrong, because I could have swore I'm reading that you're a biochemistry major and you're talking about brand development and advocacy. I'm confused. No. Take that as a compliment. Okay. Lois?
Could I have just a quick follow-up? In your answer, you referenced working with political figures. Who are you talking about working with?
Jury.
Our primary focus was on the state legislature, just because that has the most direct impact on discrete policy issues that are going happening, you know, coming down the pipeline on a day-to-day basis. But basically, anybody that would be any, we frankly call them decision makers. At some points, we were lobbying administrators. Even the Board of Regents within itself became an area that we focused on to a great deal as well. But in terms of legislators, the bulk of individuals that we met with out of the meetings that we had, the vast majority of them were with state legislators, primarily on the House Higher Education Committee.
Yes. Talk a little bit more about the new integrated learning model, the interdisciplinary model, and from your perception as a consumer of this opportunity, if you were, how well is it working? How well has it been implemented? And are there changes that need to be made from a policy standpoint?
Okay, that's a great question. This is something that became somewhat of a passion, personal passion of mine, just kind of a side thing since I was so involved with this class called Bio 2004. So the nature of this, it's called Foundations Biology. There are a total of 12 credits worth of biology, including class time and labs that a CBS student has to take. And the nature of this is that it is entirely group-based. Everything is done with about, depending on what the setting is, one group, eight person, the entire semester. You have to work with those people the whole time. You're not sitting in a lecture hall. You're sitting at a circular table with those eight people, and you have computers for every person. Each table has a monitor. Each table has a microphone. Things are very connected. And this is the case throughout the entire class. Things are more project-based. There's less focus on exams. There's more of a shift towards group assignments, towards group tests even. And the general idea is that you're forced to work with people. In my personal case, I can say that was a large struggle to start out. I had this very intense independence, and that's a big problem for a lot of people. The type of people in this program are very motivated and very intent on doing their own thing. But from that standpoint, I would say that I learned a great deal. It fundamentally changed me in terms of how I look at working with people and being able to incorporate the not only feedback but also just operationally what's going on with that. In terms of the success, to answer that part of the question, it's going very well. The university is seeing it as a very positive contribution. We had a review panel come in consisting of a few leaders in biology, and they did a review of the entire program, and they said it's very, very positive. They see this as a national model. They see it as Minnesota leading the pack, and it's something that is very promising. It's kind of on the cusp. There were things that were pointed out. This was a full curriculum review, but there were things that were pointed out that you do lose, and this is something to consider in policy. You lose a certain level of independence when it comes to the goal of education, being able to, you as one container of a person, you've got to put as much info in that as possible and make it effective information that you can apply, synthesize, and move forward in a meaningful fashion rather than just have. There were found to be gaps on some levels. And even talking to professors, one very telling statistic is a grading scheme. I had one professor tell me that he was not particularly pleased because, and this was immunology, so a pretty tough course. He got a kick out of putting three people through the ringer. And one of the things that he really accentuated, though, was the idea that a typical grading outline, or not grading outline, but a distribution, would be that you have this, this very small group of people. There's a little hump right here that are just struggling on every level. You got that big bump in the middle that's kind of average and things like that, and then you got this little bump up here. That's the people getting it. They know what's going on. They're really rocking it. But he said that now that everybody has gone through this class, there's no longer any students that have not gone through this program. He's seen a major shift happen, and it's very consistent. That everything is kind of merging together. So instead of having this group up here anymore where they're specifically seeing success in their own right, there are gaps in very basic and fundamental elements of things like for biology, it's molecular biology. We end up missing certain parts of that. That's just kind of what it is. But that all kind of merged together, and the average as a whole kind of fell a little bit. So that's an interesting thing that was unexpected, that many professors didn't see that coming, policymakers, deans, and that's something that I think we would have to try and really dig into and delineate and say, okay, how can we fill those gaps, and how can we move that information in and make sure that even though we're doing things as a team and you're doing part A, you're doing part B, and you're doing part C, you still, even doing part C, understand B and A somehow. So that's a really important aspect of this. But as a whole, I can say, teaching this for a great, 7 years now, that I'm very confident in it. It very much so takes people out of their element. And realistically, I would say the fundamental thing that it did for them is made them fail. It's an important aspect of what a lot of students previously went through college not doing. So that was a big part of what I took away from that, and see why it's important.
And my follow-up to that is, how well do you feel that this is being positioned as a competitive advantage? Or is it yet?
If I could clarify, do you mean for the individual or for the institution?
For the institution, I'm sorry.
We are very well positioned to do this. The university has jumped on this bandwagon very rapidly. The kind of at the charge of this in the College of Biological Sciences is Associate Dean Robin Wright. She's very much a believer in this, wakes up every morning thinking, this is the goal, this is what we need to do, and I'm going to push this forward real hard. To the extent that, one of our newest and most prominent buildings on campus is entirely centered around this concept. The science teaching student services building, if any of you have had a chance to see that, very shiny, at the proverbial heart of the campus, is the majority of the classrooms in there. There are a few lecture halls, but those have all of the integrated technology aspects, and that's now where the classes were taught, where previously they were in another really small kind of trial-based area. So the university as a whole has taken this and kind of put it, made it the tip of the spear that they're going to move forward with as they go on to be competitive. So I think they're very well, having an entire building is, really, really neat. So I would say yes, to answer your question.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a follow-up, Mark?
Nope. Okay. Just then put me on the list.
Joanne?
Chris, you've checked all three for fifth district, student, and at-large position. And you've been speaking from a position of being a student representative. Mm-hmm. What would you say differently if we took that off the table and you're either at-large or just as a fifth district candidate?
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess I should clarify first. I checked that for the sake of flexibility, knowing that there's a tendency to shuffle these things around. Just being honest on that level. But my focus is on the student representation of students. To answer your question, though, I would say the scope changes on some level. Realistically, this gets into a bigger issue of the fact that the universities are not elected, the regents are not elected to represent the university in the context of representing a particular constituency. That's not the nature of the role, and that was kind of a surprise to me when I learned that, having worked on this issue a little bit, but they are not elected to represent a particular area. If I was representing the 5th District, elected from the 5th District, I wouldn't be representing the 5th District, but more so embodying what that district is made up of, what it means to what it means to bring the knowledge of living in that district and working with those people and being a part of that community, bringing that to the table when considering policy changes, when considering what the university needs since it's in that district, how it's working with and integrating with that community. So there's other challenges that come into considering the needs of the 5th district as it relates to the university. I would also say just considering the nature of my background is not necessarily just being a student, and that there are other a diversity of perspectives that are needed on the board. I also like to think that I still consider Montevideo my home, and that by being able to have that perspective of rural America, what Western Minnesota is all about, Greater Minnesota as a whole, as it relates to that big contrast between the Twin Cities and everything else, I would say that I also would be able to integrate that into the way that I approach my role as a 5th District Regent.
Thank you.
Sonia.
Well, my question has practically been answered, but I just want to say it one more time. You've had this distinguished leadership regarding student advocacy, and then should you become a regent for 6 years, you take on the huge role. And maybe just reinforce it for my comfort level. How do you move from the student focus to the larger, at all times larger, as a voting member?
Well, I think it's really about context. I think the nature of what I was doing as an advocate, I tend to look at things from a pretty, turn things into an equation in a lot of ways. It becomes very objective. It becomes very, these are the circumstances, these are the needs, and these are the outcomes that we're striving for. So, considering how I would change and move towards something of different scale, to some extent, I feel like I already, throughout the entirety of that role, was thinking, what do 70,000 students need on a greater level, representing all of those students collectively at certain points? But the difference is, the shift in, now it's not only that teaching and learning aspect, it's the other facets of the university's mission, and kind of doing the tug of war that the university is constantly doing with moving back and forth between what are the priorities. So I think what I would ultimately need to do is shift the contextual focus that I have towards something that is more modular, something that is more effectively adaptable. And I would say that considering what my role as an advocate was, I feel like I can not only, I'm not putting on a whole new set of clothes, I'm translating a lot of the experience that I had going on there. So I think it's taking bits and pieces, and I think it's being able to see what fits and works, and then translating that over to what the role would be as a region.
Lois?
I haven't raised my hand.
Oh, I'm sorry. How did I do that? Margaret?
Well, you're a proven leader. I sat at homecoming time and saw you receive the award for advocacy at the Alumni Association. Anyone who's a daring leader, be they a student or someone who's very mature, they make missteps. They ruffle feathers. They sort of irritate people at times, or people don't understand them. If you were to think of an instance that was important, that you were trying to drive something through, and it just didn't work, and if you could rewind the video, edit it out, and replay it, what was that, and what did you learn?
That's a very good question. Thank you for that. I have a pretty good example of addressing this issue, where I ultimately failed in driving something through. And my example would be my work with Ducks Unlimited. So the background on that, I was co-founder of the university's chapter, Ducks Unlimited. What that is a nonprofit. I just assume everybody knows what it means, right? But Ducks Unlimited is a nonprofit organization that's internationally renowned for raising money and conserving wildlife habitats. They were formed in 1937. They raised about $3.5 billion to buy and preserve wetland habitats. Sorry. As a personal interest, they typically appeal to outdoorsmen. Being from Western Minnesota, there's a lot of land that they work with out there, and they're a very important organization. And I, with a few friends, sought out to fill the void of DU's presence on campus. So we formed the University of Minnesota chapter of Ducks Unlimited and worked with that for a while. And then based on my work, what I actually did was I developed a website, created kind of an intranet for our specific committee, and the kind of thing that you would typically do as college students. We just, you know, make, we just do those kind of, that's a, the kind of thing that we do. And this was completely outside of the norm for Ducks Unlimited. So they took note of that, and our regional director asked me if I would actually join the state committee and basically revamp their system that they got going on. So I didn't really have a dedicated role or anything, but they basically looked me at, you know, looked at me as kind of like the tech guru. You're gonna help usher us into this, because the nature of the organization is that it's largely middle-aged to even older males, right? So they are not exactly tech savvy, and they were aware of this, and they understand. Yeah, they were aware of this, and they understood it, and they picked me out and said, "Will you help us, please?" And I said, "Gladly. I love doing this stuff. You know, this is being able to take a system and implement it in this manner, analyze elements of efficiency, and make that effective for everybody, integrate things together, is a true, like, very core passion of mine." So what I tried to do was I took a very simple thing, Google Apps, if anybody knows what that is. Everybody uses Google, right? But there's a lot of things that are focused towards businesses and small organizations and stuff like that. Perfect fit for Ducks Unlimited. It was even free. So I thought, this is fantastic. They're going to love it. The reality of the situation is I was up against very significant cultural norms. Technical literacy is difficult within itself. That's hard stuff. But it goes more into a willingness to change. And I identified very quickly a lot of heated tempers, a lot of, you know, the same people that were asking me and begging me to help them with this were pushing back and were really struggling. And you know, I went through many phases and got it implemented. You know, we went from them printing out, there's about 300 committees, so the scale was pretty large. There's a few thousand individuals in the states or in the state for the organization. So I was creating a system that would allow them to move from taking documents that they had previously just burned onto a disk for them to run events and literally transported them to every part of the state, all 300 committees. I transitioned them to a system that would have a central repository of documents, be able to give them the opportunity to have customized web addresses, things that would be able to promote their events and things that they were doing with each. Because, the thing about it is the system as a whole is not homogenous whatsoever. So they all needed their own thing. And I provided them with the ability to create their own customized website to promote things, and ultimately turn it into a pretty snappy and, you know, real slick operation overnight. Even though that was implemented, adoption was very difficult. I went through several months of training with key leaders in the organization, working with the state committee, trying to move that forward. But it was ultimately left at a state of disuse, or very, very specific use. For instance, the other college chapters picked this up immediately. They loved the idea of having a DU branded email address, right? But as a whole, it's I still actually manage this, but it's seen little activity. So, to answer your question, what I would do if I went back, I don't know. I'd maybe wait a generation, I think.
Ducks Unlimited is our company's client. I'm relating.
What I will say is that a lot of what I did in this organization has a very direct parallel to what I did with the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition. The exact the cultural shifts that were necessary, the elements of resistance and bringing people together to form a meaningful coalition was something that I saw, wait a second, I think I've kind of dealt with this before. You know, it was a 6-year-old man, now it's a sophomore in college, but there's real comparable circumstances that I translated into that situation, and I feel was successful as a result. I probably would have gone into the development of the MSLC a little bit more bullheaded than I did if I was not aware of how sensitive some of these things can be when it comes to bringing people together. So, to answer your question.
Good answer. Jennifer.
Hi. Wanted to ask you some of your thoughts about access to higher education, so taking a different turn now around culture. How do you – there's a couple questions here. One is, what do you know about equity and diversity at the University of Minnesota? And then secondly, what are some experiences that you think you could bring to that conversation of increasing access?
Sure. Right. So, obviously, diversity, you know, each of these three elements has a more broken down, much, you know, it gets really long when it comes to identifying priorities of the university. Diversity is, you know, on top of the list. It's the kind of thing that the university is striving to do in every element and every facet of the of its operation and what it's going forward with. It's a huge priority for me personally as well. I guess what I tend to do to kind of define the way that I see it, I turn things into an equation. I look at it from a very the initial approach is a relatively objective standpoint. I actually think of relatable instances in my field, biology or science. Diversity defines the strength of a system, checks and balances in diversity of elements, not chemical elements specifically, but sometimes maybe. But the strength of that system comes forward with true diversity, being able to have networks of interaction, networks of performers and differences and things that hold each other up, I feel carries a very direct analogy to and defines the importance of diversity on a social level. Being able to have a strong network of interaction, of differences in backgrounds and differences in how they carry forward with what their lifestyle is and what their walk of life is. In terms of... Did you ask what would...
Well, what experiences? You've led coalitions.
Oh, right, there was, yeah, sorry.
And I'll be real specific, you know, African-American, Latino groups, how do you engage with different groups to do?
I don't have specific experience with diversity-oriented groups in the nature of that being what defines them specifically. But what I will say is that going back to the MSLC again, the nature of that role was representation. And... just like we were trying to build an analog to the way that the university represents itself as a whole, we were carrying forward the priority of the university in the name of students. And diversity being one of those central themes, we made that not specifically just on a social level, but on a level of what their just experiences as a whole are. So they're two ways in which I feel like we effectively accentuated the concept of diversity. Excuse me. The first one is just who basically was involved in recruiting and in building the teams that would go on and lobby on behalf of the students and things. I made a point of, you know, we're going to have a lot of poli-sci majors interested, a lot of sociology majors interested, right? Of selecting backgrounds that have a very broad spectrum of experience. I want that chemical engineer. I want that sociology major. I want that law student. I want that literacy or literature major. You know, I want a really a broad spectrum of people that are going to be representing students, so that it's telling of the cross section of students we actually have on campus, and it's not, you know, one particular group of people. The other aspect, and I guess I should say, we did that to the extent that when I was writing the bylaws for that organization, a diverse set of individuals was made forth as a priority in the actual bylaws within itself. The second way that we did that was in the way that we addressed issues. So it would be typical to think that we looked at and focused on really big, important things like the bonding bill and the budget. Those things cycling back and forth are obviously on the platform every year. But one thing that I really wanted this organization to have was a true level of scalability. So not only be able to go to those big issues, but be able to get to very minute, discrete issues. And the way that we did that was we obviously had a lot of people involved, but was to take and dedicate people to particular issues in a sense that you are the liaison to that organization. And yeah. What we did was we actively sought out student groups that needed their own assistance in advocacy. And oftentimes this was centered on diversity, just because one of the big issues that we dealt with last year was voter ID. So we were actively involved in the policymaking, dealing with the author of that on a big scale. But at the same time, there were organizations like the Black Student Union or something like that that were very interested in advocating or speaking out based on this particular issue. So what we did was we can't necessarily represent the entire student body by one particular small organization like that. But what we did do is provide a means of being able to embrace and carry forward their own advocacy issues. So the same way that we train and enable our own advocates, we wanted to make that a possibility for individual organizations on their own accord. Another example is an issue I worked on personally, I think I'm going to pronounce this wrong, Falun Gong, I believe. It's a humanist movement in China. I was approached after an event by the advisor of this group. The summary of it is that these people are being persecuted. Students on campus wanted, a lot of it is centered around art and culture and things like that. It's a very interesting organization. But the idea is that they were afraid of being involved because of persecution. They wanted to be able to work with the university to try and gain support on some level. And that's an issue that we obviously can't take upon our own accord, but we can provide them with skills and be able to wrap the generic concepts of advocacy around any issue and make them able to move forward with that. So I would say that was my own personal experience in being able to represent diversity.
We're nearing the end of our time.
Sure.
Okay, so if we can, we'll try to get through a couple more questions if we can keep them concise. So, Jerry?
Sure, understand.
Okay, first, are you sure you don't want to reconsider medical school? I'm not. I'm just kidding.
Could I clarify?
Sure.
I didn't clarify my career goals. Okay. My current status is that I am a master's student focusing on stem cell biology. So that's a research-focused master's. Following that, I will actually be going to medical school. So that's the...
This is an MD.
Oh, okay.
You're out of medical school. So we need you there.
So I guess to elaborate, this is my take on an MD PhD. I didn't want to get the full PhD. Or focus strictly on basic science, but be able to carry an edge with a research background into a clinical setting, actually working with patients. You know, that's, I guess, so to kind of put that into perspective to some extent, my hope then would be that this continue forward as a master's. If I were selected as a regent, that I actually would be able to attend potentially the university's medical school. That's my personal hope. It's never a sure thing, of course, but be able to extend that tenure as a student while serving as a regent as well. So just to clarify on that level, whether it's during or after, I plan on going to medical school no matter what.
Oh, the question I wanted to...
Sorry.
thank you for clarifying that. And mine's a little bit similar to what Sonia asked earlier, but you mentioned that you went with a student group going to the legislature to lobby for tuition controls. I understand that. What about and you mentioned policy. So what kind of policy do you lobby for the student group?
It really varies. We put together a slate of issues that are relatively broad. These are things that range from, like I said, the budget and the bonding bill are always on there, and we support the university in those initiatives. And other times, we branch off and do our own thing. A good example, I would say, is Opportunity Minnesota. That was a policy that that we dealt with and collaborated with Empergon to some extent. But other examples are things like textbook policy. We worked with King Banyan last year and testified on behalf of a a policy that he carried to make textbooks more accessible and things like that. There, realistically, it's a range of issues that can hit anything in higher education. And the other aspect was we weren't only carrying forward that particular that banner that we would wave around that represents our organization, but we would address anything that came down the pipeline. So a lot of times you get like a tuition freeze bill that someone's bringing up, and we would address that as well. So basically at the ready to take action on any policy measure, both whether it's written by ourselves or in support of something like Representative Banyan's bill as well.
Okay. I have something to add. And my second part of that, you're appointed as a regent, and not just as a student, but as a regent now on the board, you're going to be required to go back to that legislature and lobby again.
Yeah.
Is there anything different that you lobby for now as a regent than you did as a student?
That's a good question. I think that to some extent goes back to the question about how I would transition into this role from Ms. Cairns there. I would say that 50,000 foot view really changes. So now I am not only focused on that one demographic or that one priority and the discrete needs that go along with that constituency, but putting it into the context of the three legs of that stool and what those needs are as it relates to the university. The other aspect is that it's now not just talking about the university on a level of where we are students, we go out, we're the labor force, we're your future, all that stuff. But talking and putting it more into the context of how the university fits into the state as an institution, how it provides an economic value, how it's an engine for discovery and innovation, and the outreach and the benefits that come from the impact that it has on all aspects of the state. That's something that we dealt with to a lesser extent, being more focused strictly on student issues, but I think that's the other aspect is now if I were a regent working at the legislature, it's reminding them of all of those things and the scale that they have and the importance of the university to the state as a whole, to those keeping that in the fresh in the mind of the legislators.
Lois and Paul, we have a couple more volunteers for questions, but we're really tight on time, so I'll...
You know what? I'm going to sell my question slot to Lois.
Okay.
Thank you.
The pressure's on.
Yes. Three pieces. Gotta go really fast.
Well, this does not reflect on you. This reflects on Lois.
The first one is really concerned about the advocacy focus. Really concerned about it. Because the transition is massive in my mind from what your history and your very evident and valid passion is around advocacy to flip it to governance. And I may be unique in this sentiment around the table. I don't think that the student regent sits as a student. I think the student regent sits as an assurance of, in all likelihood, a younger set of eyes and experience on the board. And accordingly, it is my personal hope that that person looks at that position as a representative of the state as a whole, and in helping the board be as forward-looking as it can be, because they're just simply wired differently by virtue of age. And I'd like to then quickly go to the other two things, right at the tail end of what you were just answering there about the pieces, that the economic driver piece and all of those things. You're sharp as a tack, and you're from Greater Minnesota, and you see those issues, economic driver ways, differently than anybody that's metro has the ability to see them. And sitting as a regent, speaking for the state as a whole, you could bring wonderful insight on that. And then I'd like to go finally to one of the answers that you gave in response. I think it might have been question number 4 in talking about the technology impact, and you used the word disruptive, which is accurate as can be on what's facing higher education. Talk a little bit, if you would, please, with the eyes that you are bringing, the experience base and the mind that you are bringing, about how you would work within the regent structure around those disruptive dynamics that digital technology is bringing and will continue to bring to higher education.
So this is a very broad issue. I don't know if you noticed on my application, but I addressed it as one of the major three priorities that I see in going forward that the university needs to address. I specifically said electronic learning, but technology is just the concept as a whole. In my personal experience, like I said, those tech systems, you know, making websites and talking about email and stuff like that, that's something that gets me going. I really enjoy computers as a whole. That's just something I'm very genuinely personally interested in. You know, it's kind of odd, but a role of mine that I kind of have assumed with my family and friends is the guy that fixes everything. That's kind of what it's become, whether it be getting teaching my mother how to copy and paste photos or teaching Ducks Unlimited how to create a scalable intranet. So I would say it's consideration of what the state of it is, being very aware of that. That's just a key factor. It's so easy to get behind. I regularly read kind of the popular, like what's in the now. The Consumer Electronics Show is on right now.
Right.
Lots of stuff coming out of that.
Yes.
You know, you miss that even over the course of a few months, and there's things that are coming out and you're completely lost. But in terms of actually working with the group, I know that on the board there might be limitations there. It's a matter of being forward-thinking about how we can utilize those tools and not being dismissive. That's a very typical response is just generally being dismissive. I know what I'm doing already. There's a system that works. Why are we changing this? But being able to take that dismissiveness and then turn it around and say, well, here's the reality of the situation. What we need to do, first of all, if there is a need there, and a lot of times there is, but also what's possible. The idea of the university is moving forward on all fronts in an innovative style, and the true nature of how we should be operating within ourselves is that we should also be carrying innovation in the forefront of our minds. So I think being able to highlight features, being able to highlight aspects of how those changes can be made, both within the board itself and the decisions that we make, I think is probably the most important thing. And stressing that and being diligent is probably another one. It's really hard to make those changes, but you know, I can say to myself, jumping from different system to different system, it comes with time.
Thank you.
Thank you. There is a procedural issue that I just want to make sure we raise and we talk about. And that is, Lois, if I may, so you checked all three slots that we have available, which you are qualified for, as a fifth district representative. You would need to be a resident of the fifth district. So as where you live on Franklin Avenue, I'm assuming is if that would be considered your residence.
Yeah.
But so as a student regent, we believe the policy of the board is that you're allowed to continue to be an employee of the university.
Okay.
But as any of the other slots, you would it would raise questions with the current policy of the board as far as being an employee of the university. So I'm just raising that so that you're aware of that.
Okay.
If you'd care to comment on that in your closing statement, you sure may. So we're at that point for closing statement. The other thing I would invite you is if there is a question that you really thought we would ask or maybe appropriately should have asked, and you're walking out of here saying, I can't believe they didn't ask me this question, please bring it up and bring up the answer for it as well. So
okay.
Closing statement, the floor is yours.
The question. Who's my favorite Gopher basketball player right now? Okay. Andre Hollins, if you're wondering.
Okay.
Playing Illinois tonight, so that's a big road game. Yeah.
Okay.
But more seriously, one thing I would kind of like to stress that we haven't touched on at all is talked a lot about the advocacy stuff, but highlight the fact that the greater part of my experience, the advocacy relation, that relationship is very strong when it comes to the requirements, the needs, and the qualifications for the board. But again, just stress the reality that a greater part of my background actually exists in things outside of that, being research, medicine. That's my true focus. That was kind of a common thing as I was doing the advocacy stuff, that people wouldn't even realize that that was what I was actually doing with more of my time and focusing on that. To the extent that I feel more accomplished as a researcher, having personally been published several times, co-authored several papers, and been able to go forward and actually move that as an academic career. The other aspect is the business side. So what I listed on my application there was the fact that I currently am involved in starting a business. This is amongst a few friends, and it's been about a six-month thing, and we're going through the ropes of operating the startup, and it's going very successfully. To the extent that just this morning, I have an announcement, we inked a deal with Kaufman Bookstore where we will be selling our product, which is lip balm, in each of the campus bookstores across the system. So that was very exciting for us this morning.
Does it make you more technology?
Oh, the lip balm.
You might have a market there.
Who makes the lip balm for you?
Who makes the lip balm? Our manufacturing partner is a company called Eco Lips. It's located in Iowa. They make premium organic.
Eco Lips?
Yep.
Or Eagle Lips?
Eco. Like
ecology.
Eco.
Environmentally friendly. Okay. They make so our product is premium organic lip balm, and the nature of our business model is it's one focused around a social mission. So the company is called Face to Face Organics, and what we do in selling lip balms, our first choice, because it's very cheap, we're not very rich fellows, so we went with a low barrier to entry product. And what we do is, as we sell this product, we have highlighted and selected giving partners that have associated causes that we then link to our business sales as well. So the idea is that right now we're giving money towards facial reconstructive surgery.
Chris,
all right.
You have a few minutes when we're finished here to...
Yeah, gladly.
Because
sure.
We need to tell them about Innovate.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got 48 hours to apply.
Oh, okay, sure. Okay. Well, that's great.
You just thought this would have a happy ending.
That's good. But the idea is, and this is our model, face-to-face. We're bringing our customers, as they use this product on their own face-to-face with individuals that they're helping in need. So that's the idea. We have an associated foundation called the Sharing Smiles Foundation that's currently in 501c3 right. certification.
Right.
And that's the central hub for our giving. We'll be expanding products over the course of the next year, and we'll also be partnering with associated companies who have similar models and alternative missions. So I would just like to highlight that as well as, again, we have a broad
awesome.
Base. A broad base of background that I feel would translate very effectively into the role as a regent.
George has a burning question or comment.
Yeah, before you leave, and we probably won't see you again until we make our decision or whatever, but you said in your comments that you considered Montevideo your home. And so my question is, where do you vote?
I actually do vote in the 5th District.
In the 5th District. Thank you. That was the only question.
Shortest
answer.
In my heart. Yes, Montevideo.
Anything else for closing statement?
I guess I will end there. We're short for time. Your legs are probably stiff. So.
Oh, come on. Being a medical person, he didn't want any clots.
Did you bring some lip balm to rub on her legs?
I have a tube in my pocket.
Just happened to have some. Well, with that, thank you very much for this enlightening conversation for us.
Thank you again for the opportunity.